plenty of questions coming in today for our show on child development and looking through the final two letters in the alphabet, which are Y and Z, in case you didn't know. Looking at why and when do kids have too many questions, and moving on to sleeping routines and how important sleeping routines are from children. Messages are coming in thick and fast. A lot of people quite concerned, still at a relatively early age of a child's development in terms of their speech and their vocabulary. We've had one question in saying, when can I talk to my children in two languages, and how many hours, incidentally, should they be watching TV for the ages of 10, 8, 6? And let's move 10, 8, 6, and how old's the other one?
And
1.5 years.
Yeah. Excellent question. Two languages, really from birth. Don't wait to speak to them in multiple languages. Brain development has shown that there is a critical period where the brain is sort of the most open, the most plastic, is making the most connections with respect to second language development, which is between the ages of 2 years and 8 years. So even going back to what you were saying, Alex, about your friends that speak these multiple languages, that's probably when they were the most exposed to all these languages. And they will retain this ability for the rest of their lives if they're exposed to these languages from the early years. So, you know, saying to this parent, don't wait, just continue to speak to them in as many languages as you want them to pick up. And make sure that, you know, if you are going to start it, repeat one sentence in English and one sentence in that second language. One sentence in English, one sentence in that second language.
Do you ever get confused? Has there ever been a time where you've been confused between speaking varying languages, or it's never?
Maybe so as an adult, especially if I don't practice. So I was taught French for a very long time. But you put me in a situation and I'll still sort of get a little bit confused with my French and Arabic, which is really interesting because they're so different to each other. But yes, I as an adult do, because I personally feel like I haven't had enough experience and enough practical experience, especially in the spoken realm of it. But children that do have enough experience, they'll end up multilingual, trilingual, if they've had enough experience and practice with it. So I really encourage parents, don't wait. Just continue to speak to them. Start to speak to them in a second language that you want them to pick up.
Yeah, one of my friends actually he's 24. Mm-hmm. And he's Palestinian Jordanian.
Okay.
And his parents have spoken to him in English and Arabic all their lives, the three of them. And I know that they can speak Arabic, but they haven't done so. None of the children have done so.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the eldest one, who's 24, has just started speaking Arabic. I mean,
really?
Obviously he's spoken Arabic for years.
Yeah.
But he's even, I mean, I've been to the house when the mum has spoken to them in Arabic, and they reply
in English
all the time.
So
he's just started doing it at 24 years
old.
Yeah,
and it's so wonderful that he still retained that, and that's the beauty of teaching them a language at an earlier age, as opposed to when some of us embark and say, okay, I'm 12 now, or I'm 24 now, let me learn a new language. Much more difficult, not impossible, but much more difficult for our brain to be able to really inculcate this language into our behavior.
Yeah.
It'll be much easier for him because he's been exposed to it. He's retained all of that memory of the language.
And it's not that he doesn't, it's just literally they haven't been speaking, using the words. They understand
everything.
It, they know,
they're
just lazy, you're lazy boys.
It's great that he's pushing himself though.
Yeah.
One thing to keep in mind, however, is if it's not your native language as a parent and you're not fluent in it, do not speak to them in that language. Because as a child, they will pick up the incorrect accents, the incorrect pronunciations, and the incorrect grammatical errors. Just as easily as they would pick up the sort of correct way of using the language. That's one very important thing. If it's not your language, do not use it as much in front of the child.
Which is interesting, actually, because I've met a couple of people who have some very odd accents. and when I ask how they learned, for instance, English, one friend of mine said, who's German, had actually learned English from a Welsh guy that she'd gone out with in Germany.
Okay.
And she has a very strong Welsh accent.
Yeah, that's so
never
funny.
Never even been to the UK.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
So it is very important to consider that. Going back to answer the rest of this parent's question with respect to TV, You know, and summer is a really, really difficult time just because, you know, how can I entertain my children and give them activities, etc. When it comes to specifically watching TV for the 10, 8, and 6-year-old, you know, by and large, a similar developmental bracket, really try and limit it to a couple of hours a day and really nothing more than that, if you can, if there is a way around it, to instead look at alternatives like different activities, getting them out of the house, whatever it is, try and limit it to 2 hours a day, only because TV is not very interactive. It's a one-way sort of communication pathway. Not speaking back to you. You know, if you do decide to expose them to more TV, try and ensure it's educational TV. So a little bit of Discovery Channel, a little bit of, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to teach them. But make sure it's a little bit of a varied interest. And screen the content. You know, just as you were to screen the nutritional content of what your child is going to put in their mouths, watch what they're going to watch on TV. Make sure that you know exactly what the program is about, because you don't want them exposed to things that they're not developmentally ready for, more than anything else. And as for her 1.5 years old, zero. Yeah. 0, 0, 0 TV. There have been so many studies, in particular, the American Academy of Pediatrics says, do not expose children below the age of 3 to TV, because there have been studies that have shown, because of the quick scene shifts in sort of displaying an image on the TV, there's sort of 10,000 scene shifts per second on a TV to bring you that cohesive image. The child's brain thinks that that's normal level of activity. So when they grow older, and about the age of 7, they actually have a 35% increased chance of developing ADHD, because the brain thinks that's normal stimulation. I now need a much higher level of stimulation to stimulate my brain. You know, and there's so many other studies out there, especially below the age of 3. If you've already done it, there's no hard and fast rule that they're definitely going to develop ADHD, and that's not at all a connection that we're trying to make. It's just limit their exposure to it. And in this particular family, it is going to be really difficult, because they have sort of 3 other older children who are going to be, you know, watching TV all the time. How do you limit that child all the time? Try your best.
I'm not very sure. I'm not very sure how much television I watched as a child, but I very rarely put on the TV.
Really?
Yeah. It's just not something I do. In fact, I keep wondering why I've even got a television. Although nowadays I spend a lot of time on the computer, I suppose.
But, it's sort of replaced it.
Yeah, but television is just not something that I ever really bother with. We've got some questions about your contact details, which we will give to everyone. But there's the same question has come in a couple of times, really. Kids generally, young children have at some point come out with that question, where do babies come from? And it's such a difficult one, and it's not one that we'll go into too much, because it's school holidays and everything as well. But it'd be interesting to find out from yourselves, when you've got to that stage, how old has your child been when you felt that you could start to answer that sort of question? And what did you say? 4001, let us know. What did you answer to your child when you were asked, where do babies come from? And we were talking about it, actually. It's a very different in different cultures, yes, and backgrounds and religions. And so it's a bit of a difficult one, but it's been good. Hi, ladies. Great programme. Thank you very much. I'm 30 years old. My father has always spoken to us in Punjabi since we were born. Half of my text is gone.
Mom always in Urdu.
In Urdu. All of us brothers and sisters are fluent in Urdu, but can't speak Punjabi.
As fluently, yeah. That's interesting, especially because they seem to have been quite exposed to the language. I'm wondering why the brothers and sisters decided to pick up Urdu instead, you know, and that you can sort of read into that. And of course, there's not all the information here, but mum, the mother figure, is particularly speaking in Urdu. Brothers and sisters then develop that language as their own language to communicate with each other. If they had, as children, spoken both in Urdu and in Punjabi, they probably would have ended up with a much more fluent command.
But Urdu is the more dominant language anyway, out of the
two. Yeah, that's a good point. It's more widely spoken. It's also very, very similar to Hindi, which again is widely spoken, and depending on where they grew up. They would be much more subjected if they grew up in Dubai to Urdu or Hindi as opposed to Punjabi. So that definitely has something to do with it. Mm. And you're absolutely right. Sort of just mainstream at school, if their peers spoke in Urdu, Urdu in English, for example, they're still more likely to have more practice with Urdu, which is probably why they haven't spoken Punjabi. However, having said that, because they were exposed to this language from such an early age, they can very easily, like your 24-year-old friend, who's making a conscious effort to now switch into his mother tongue, this was absolutely going to be possible if they do have to make a little bit more of a conscious effort.
Mm. Final few bits and pieces about child development and the development of speech. How would we actually identify or even can we identify a gifted child by their interaction of speech at a young age?
That's a really good question. You know, you have sort of these gifted children that will, again, never-ending questions. You know, parents end up becoming really tired, and at the same time, they do want to encourage curiosity. It is very important for, you know, strategies how parents can deal with this. One of the biggest ways is set up a convenient time to answer these questions. You know, if you don't want them in the middle of your day, like you said before, set aside a time at another day to be able to answer some of these questions. Another day, another time. Meal times are wonderful ways of promoting family cohesion, family mm-hmm. bonding. They're also a wonderful avenue for you to open up and share exactly what you've learned during the day. When it comes to these gifted children, one thing that is wonderful to expose them to, whether they're gifted or just, you know, regularly developing children, the newspaper. So important, whether it's news articles, you know, if they're sort of older children, they're going to want to look for their own information online, direct them to websites, make it a habit, make sure that they read the headlines on the paper, you know, of the paper every single day, and share that with you, because all of this is promoting their cognitive abilities, their language abilities, their higher order thinking, their critical thinking skills, and sort of making this a habit is something that they will really benefit from as an adult.
Good. I do think it's exceptionally important to sit round as a family for family meals. It's not something we did as a child. Just if you could give us the information about the Human Relations Institute. We can find out details on the internet.
Yeah, sure. There's a website, www.hridubai.com, and you're welcome to call in at 04-365-8498 or email us at hri@hridubai.com.
That's great. So people can come and see you in person if they have any particular questions. And there are lots of questions coming in. If you would like to contribute, 4001 is the SMS number. You can, of course, SMS us from any network. We'll be moving on slightly once we've answered your questions and having a look at why sleep patterns and routines are so important for children. Stay tuned.